GM, I'm Dan Roberts.
I'm Matthew Diemer.
I'm Kate Irwin.
And this is
GM from Decrypt.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Okay, GM for the week in review. Kate, Matthew Diemer, what's up?
GM, y'all.
GM.
All right. What a week it was. In some ways, it's been interesting this start of the year because the coins are up, which is nice. People are pleased about that. Market in the green most days. Bitcoin up, ETH up. Of course, way down from the all-time highs. I know. But price is up. And yet, still a lot of bad news on the corporate front. The bankruptcies, the insolvencies. We had more layoff news this week. Matrixport, blockchain.com, Coinbase, all doing more layoffs. And that's just in crypto. In the larger tech industry, layoffs all across the board. I mean, when Amazon did it toward the end of last year, that was a surprise. Amazon never does layoffs. Then we saw Google, 12,000 people. I mean, guys, if you have to lay off 12,000 people, you did something very wrong. Matt, what's your take here on what's going on this bloodbath in tech?
Well, I don't know if it's just about the layoffs, because remember, 12,000 people is 6% of their workforce. And we saw this in crypto. We see this all over tech. We saw when, you know, everything was mooning. Companies were hiring like crazy. And what Google had said is that they are over hiring. I think the notable thing was the whole thing with you guys saw these TikTok videos with Nicole Tsai. She was like this Google employee that TikToked and showed off where she was working. She had a video a while back, and it was about her working in Google. And it was like, it was showing her going to work, grabbing a coffee, them having food for them. Everything was free, grabbing a bottle of water or sparkling water, you know, a LaCroix or whatever, going to a massage chair, going to these great conference rooms. And everybody kind of like hated on her because it was like, oh, do you even work? Oh, what are you even doing? Like, oh, you guys are so treated so well. It's like, is this a, you know, real job? And so she got shit for that. Then she got laid off, and these 12,000 Google employees got laid off. And she did the same thing and said, hey, I'm going to do a TikTok of my process of this. And so she woke up, she TikToked and recorded her calling her boss. Her boss didn't know that she was laid off. She went to her computer to log into her email. Her computer access was cut off, so she couldn't log into her email to see what was going on. Then her friends and a lot of her Google employees or fellow coworkers went to Google and tried to go into Google, scan their key fob, and that's how they found out they were laid off. And so I think the real thing is like how workers are being treated, how like those irresponsibility of hiring practices, and then what the bigger narrative is about the what people think about this whole process of what how a worker should be treated. First of all, you say you can't be treated like this with you know LaCroix sparkling drinks, and then also you say, oh, they're treated improperly. And I think that's the really interesting thing that's happening right now with this whole layoff situation.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see this happen across the tech industry. I mean, in crypto, it seems like crypto has faced worse layoffs in terms of just percentages of the companies seeing staffers leave. In the case of Google, I mean, it's shocking. I wonder to what extent it's an internal comms issue versus to what extent it's just like their standard corporate policy or what's really going on here. I mean, my sources at Google are very sad about the fact that so many people have been laid off, and they think it's a very somber moment for the company. And it's very a dark time for a lot of people there.
Of course, what happens right after you do layoffs is the stock goes up. You know, stock market loves a big round of cuts. When it comes to Google, and I don't want to waste too much of our time on this, but you know, I did tweet 1 week ago, based on sources I had at Google, that exactly the situation Matthew described was happening. There were people who arrived at work Friday morning, so 1 week ago today, and discovered they were laid off because they were told to scan their cards, something that at Google in New York, which is the offices in Chelsea Market, they don't normally have to do, by the way. I mean, this is a key nuance here, but normally someone just opens the door because you hold up your badge and they let a bunch of people through. But what happened a week ago was they were told to line up and scan their badge, and people whose badge turned red, it meant you had been laid off. And it's unbelievable. I mean, my tweet, which was the first to bring attention to this, it's been seen 12 million times, which is kind of nuts. And for a week, my mentions on Twitter have been ruined by people just insisting, fake news, you're a liar, you made this up, you know, Google would never do that. And, you know, I'm a little vindicated that, of course, many, many stories have come out of people saying, yep, this is exactly what happened. This is how I found out. And the reason has become, the reason is because the process was clearly so hastily rushed. It was like, suddenly, you know, did they decide on Thursday night, oh, we have to lay off 12,000 people? The email that was company-wide from Sundar Pichai went out at 2 a.m. Pacific, 5 a.m. Eastern on a Thursday night. And that was the email just saying, layoffs are coming. Then they started sending people the personal emails saying, you are laid off. There are people who didn't get that email until noon Eastern on Friday. So I don't know what goes wrong that suddenly you have to cut 12,000 people and you have to do it urgently and hastily like this. But my goodness, right? I mean, it's just a reminder, like these companies, they're just way too big and bloated. I mean, if you can cut 12,000 people and then just move on and the stock goes up, yikes, you're too big.
A similar issue is happening, like you said, Matt, about the TikToks and the sort of day in the life at Google TikToks. There's a lot of similar ones coming out, a day in the life at Meta, and similar things happening there where they were sort of focusing on the food that they were eating as opposed to sort of maybe describing the amount of time that they were working. And so it was leading to this kind of skewed perspective where they were getting a lot of criticism for, you know, it seeming like maybe they were spending most of their day just sort of eating and chatting with coworkers. But I wanted to bring up Gemini and what's going on there right now. I don't know, you know, how much of it, how accurate, you know, what's happening there could be applied to what's happening in the rest of the tech industry at all. I think it might be a bit of a unique situation here, given what's been happening with Gemini. But from what I understand from my sources there, there's very little internal communication and employees, a lot of them don't really know what's going on. Initially, they had just gotten like an apology from the internal team there. And it's been announced that they're just not getting bonuses, promotions, or performance reviews until like the end of 2023 at the earliest. And that everyone there, not only are they laying people off, but the people that are there are trying to leave actively and actively trying to quit and leave the company. So, you know, as we think about all these tech layoffs, I feel like there is a bit of a sort of silver lining here, which is that not everyone who's laid off is laid off for very long. According to this one ZipRecruiter study, 80% of recently laid off tech employees were able to find new jobs again within 3 months.
But like, I wonder if that's true in crypto.
Yeah, I wonder that. I mean, Coinbase still has their sort of, I suppose, almost infamous like staff database of people that we couldn't hire but recommend. That's still live, if anyone was wondering.
Right. Thanks.
I do want to ask two questions. I want to make a statement and a question, because first, I do want to commend, say, Kraken and Coinbase, because they've been pretty transparent about the amount of severance and benefits they're going to extend. And look, layoffs do happen. And we've all been through massive layoffs in either one startup or one company. I think we should, and I have, and it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal to wake up one morning and see half of the team or 60% of the team gone, in my case, which, you know, was around 60, 70 people. But, you know, it is also nice to know that they're extending 3 months, 6 months with benefits and healthcare. And that's very nice that they're being very transparent about that. But my question to you guys is, just to try to steel man this a little bit, and I know we don't want to dwell on this, but how do you, if you have a company of tens of thousand employees, axe 20 or 12,000 employees overnight without an email, without some kind of, and still want to protect your IP and still want to protect what the person was working on. And now, I don't know if I have a good question, because you can't bring everybody in one by one into the office and give them a good explanation, you know, give them some tissues to cry on and then say the next one. It's just too big of a process. What's the way to do it?
Well, ideally, real quick, I'll go. Ideally, not overnight. And you're right about the numbers. It's just too many to have everyone get an in-person, come into my office, like you see in movies when there's layoffs, right? And you sit down, give them a tissue, you're right. Too many people. But every single person has a manager. And, you know, I don't think any one person is managing 2,000 people. So, you know, you tell each person, here are your managees that we're cutting, and we want you to tell them. And you tell them via a text message to their cell phone, or a call to their cell phone, or an email to their personal email. Although it turns out there have been some Google people who said my personal email wasn't even on record at Google, so they wouldn't have been able to email there. But it can't be an email to their corporate account, the same account that's about to get cut off, right? I mean, I would vote a text message, but not a middle of the night email to your work email that you don't see before you get on the subway to go into work.
Yeah, I mean, that said, like having some kind of official internal comms communication is good. Obviously, overnight feels really rushed and sort of impersonal. But I think if these companies, like if it's just a corporate decision and it's not like a personal thing, if there's some way that they can sort of say like, it's not you, it's us, like, you know, to really help employees understand like why they're being laid off in different circumstances.
I'll give one more note, crypto specific. And I think I've said this before last year when the layoffs got bad and now they're happening again, or maybe it's that they never stopped. But many of these companies, not just the crypto ones, but the crypto ones especially, in their sad announcement or employee letter that gets shared publicly, whatever it is, at some point the executive says, you know, frankly, we overhired. You know, Dapper Labs, the guy said that, we overhired. Another one, we overhired. And it's as if being candid and acknowledging that is some kind of excuse. It's like, well, if you're admitting that you overhired so many people that now you need to cut them, well, then you fucked up. Sorry. I mean, that's bad management. Like, 100%. You know, in a bull market, I get it. Like 2020 and 2021 were heady days for crypto. And companies were like, oh, we're off to the races. We just raised a bunch of money. Let's spend that money. And it's like, sometimes something is exactly as it appears. I think these companies went, all right, we just raised, you know, $200 million. This is great. Let's get some more engineers. And it's like, you can picture the conversations that happened. Someone in the room went, well, how many engineers should we hire? And someone went, I don't know, 85? And then they just hired 85 new engineers. And then things got bad and they went, whoops. And it's like, well, the smarter companies act as though they understand and are preparing for when things will be bad again. They're not always going to be good. This is how markets go. They come in waves. You should run your business in a frugal, cost-conscious way, assuming that it won't always be up only.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, just sucks. Well, let's move on to a different section where things are a little sunnier. And that is, and I have to say, and I'm not saying like, ooh, how prescient of me. I mean, many said this, but Matthew, we recorded a predictions episode at the beginning of the year. And one of my predictions was, I think NFTs will come back. Now, maybe not the full, you know, peak speculative bubble boom of, I guess, early 2021, where people were like paying dumb money for dumb JPEGs that did nothing. But NFTs, we all agree, were never completely dead. And I said, I think they're going to come roaring back this year. And it seems to me, Kate, and you've written about some of these examples, but it seems to me that we're seeing some green shoots and we're seeing a little bit of NFT PFP mania again here at the start of the year, right?
Yeah, it seems like people haven't stopped minting things, and the community certainly hasn't gone away. I mean, we're still looking at a lot of volume traded on OpenSea. It's certainly far from what it was last year, but it isn't continuing to go down. I mean, it's not continuing to decline. According to this like Dune dashboard, it's January is already higher than last month. So, you know, there is a chance here that November of 2022 was the sort of bottom or the local bottom for the NFT trading.
I think Dan, you might be onto something. I'm still a little bearish that this is only because it's been predicted over through this whole market that we are going to see in 2023 some rises up in the markets, in Bitcoin markets, the crypto markets, NFT markets, and then we're going to even see lower lows. This is what the experts are predicting. I'm still going to take that cautionary advice. However, I thought that the most interesting NFT story I saw the past week was the one with Porsche. Look, they were going to mint Porsche. I was, you know, the automaker wanted to mint 7,500 NFTs with Porsche 911s on them. They were going to sell them for 0.911 ETH a piece. And people are saying that this is stupid, it's tone deaf, we're in the bear market. I can't believe this company is coming in here and taking advantage of the crypto space and Web3 and so on and so forth. And it's a failure. Yet at the same time, they minted like 1,800 of these things already, or as people bought 1,800 of these things for 0.911 ETH, and made around, 23 Porsche 911.
I think it was 9.7 million worth. The equivalent of 23 Porsche 911s.
So basically Porsche makes this NFT and sells 23 of their cars worth of and gets that cash like overnight, and everybody's just like, oh, this is a failure and it's a bad idea. I don't know what the NFT space is thinking. Maybe Kate can tell me because I'm not part of it, but I think that's a win.
I think the fact that they had to cut their supply was sort of the initial like, wow, guys, you couldn't figure out the demand here. And so now they sort of had to create artificial scarcity at like a whole other level by cutting the supply way, way down. I mean, yes, they are currently at a floor price of almost 2 ETH a piece. And yes, they do have 64% unique owners, which means that there aren't a lot of whales. So it's not just Porsche buying all the NFTs and hoarding them in a wallet. You know, it is like multiple different traders here and a lot of
Porsche employees
engaging. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do with it. I question a lot of these big brand plays coming out in 2023 because I do kind of feel like it's a little late. I feel like the big wave for a lot of big brands to jump on this was kind of last year when some of the big fashion brands like Gucci were doing all their metaverse plays and stuff like that. I do feel like it's a bit late to the game, but I wonder, you know, what kind of utility they might actually provide to their holders. And yeah, I mean, from an income standpoint, yeah, Porsche made money. That's great. But, you know, I think I always look at things from like a holder's perspective and from like a, is this good for the broader NFT market? You know, is this good for like the perception of NFTs? And I think about the NFT market broadly, and I think it's often understated or underestimated the impact that Yuga Labs alone has on the NFT space. They absolutely dominated the metaverse like volume trades last year, and every single mint that they do really bumps up those numbers for total volume traded. So it is sort of still this like slightly delicate space, in my opinion, where, you know, just one powerhouse is sort of dominating the economy.
I don't know who wrote the article from Decrypt, but isn't it 50% of all volume traded so far this year was a Yuga Lab related NFT?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's what it was last year, or even higher maybe, Kate, because between Punks, which they now own, Apes, Mutant Apes, Ape Kennel, Dog Kennel, Mutant Kennel Club, whatever it's called. Oof.
Yeah, I mean, that other deed mint really set the numbers high last year and sort of set us up for some lofty expectations that could not be repeatedly fulfilled over and over. So that's why it might seem like, oh my gosh, the NFT market totally crashed. It's like, well, when it was at its...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Peak, it was only because of one company's like one mint, like half over, probably over like half of that month's volume, if not the majority of that month's volume from that other side mint was because of just that one mint. So I think when we see a lot of numbers and articles saying, oh, NFT volume down massive percent, it's like, well, let's figure out what exactly happened that caused the numbers to be so high in the previous month. I don't know if we can extrapolate conclusions from like volume go up, volume go down in such dramatic ways.
I like what you said about the Porsche example, Matt, because it is like a reminder. It would be pretty time consuming because there were so many, but I almost wish we could go back and do a story on, let's revisit every big brand NFT drop from 2021 that they totally never did a thing with. And how much money did they make? And people who accused it of a cash grab, yep, it was a cash grab. And from their perspective, it worked. I mean, I just thought of the Pepsi example. And this is a column I'm still proud of from December 2021. I said, are brands going to ruin the metaverse? And the thing that prompted this at the time was Budweiser tweeted at Pepsi, welcome, brand friend, wag me. And Pepsi replied, thanks, friend, wag me, friend, F-R-E-N. And it's like, oh, God. And Meta responded to Pepsi at the time, this is going to look great in the metaverse. And it's just so cringe. And just yesterday, McDonald's tweeted to Binance and said, wag me. And everyone went, oh my God, this is so horrible. But, you know, on the other hand, these companies legitimately see like, oh, I mean, you can joke, but they're trying to signal that they know crypto's a thing.
And they do know crypto's a thing. And I don't think that people know what the thing is until it's the thing. If my memory serves me correctly, CryptoPunks were sitting around not being bought, sold, or traded for a long time before they became a thing. I aped into NFTs, and I told you on the predictions podcast is I have a phantom wallet full of Solana NFTs that don't even exist anymore, from like perky pandas and crypto wieners and all kinds of rugs. But you never knew which one was going to be the next one. And I think that by putting, like, trying to throw Porsche under the bus and saying, oh, these guys are late to the game, or this is just not gonna make it, and so on and so forth, I don't think that we know. And if they already made the money off of their NFTs, then I think it's just up to the community to push Porsche to make the, like I said, like Kate said, the utility for it, and make sure that these things grow into something. I think that a lot of these projects fail when the creators either rug, stop working on it, and the community just thinks that it's done. And if you keep pushing it, kind of like my crypto zoo eggs might get a resurgence because of CoffeeZilla's reporting on the Paul, Logan Paul. So let's hope so.
Remember Ether Rocks? Or was it Ethrox? I mean, rocks.
I got one.
Are those things still valuable?
I have no clue. I should open my wallet right now.
Yeah, seriously. You know, one more thought on the NFT stuff, and I've always said this, and the people who so virulently hate the very idea of NFTs, to them, any defense at all just sounds like you're a shill and you're a sucker. But I do believe that tokenization, and specifically of NFTs, so non-fungible tokens, there are going to be use cases that become really important and become big business. And then, of course, the natural follow is like, well, what are they? It's like, well, look, right now it's an experimental phase. There's, you know, events that are token gated, where you literally have to show that you own the NFT in person, in line, to get into the party. Cuban has talked about using them for sports. We know all these examples, right? There's like mortgage, the deed to your house. There's real estate, fractional real estate investing. Medical records, we'll see. I don't know which of these is going to be the killer use case, but I do want to reiterate, I believe that there will be use cases beyond just art. And that's not to say that art itself isn't a good enough use case. You know, I appreciated that the ArtBlocks guy told us for a recent feature that our colleague Sander wrote, that, you know, they don't care about utility. There's so many of these projects that falsely have tried to say, and here's the utility. And it's like, well, guess what? It sometimes might be okay if you say there isn't utility. It's just art. It's a digital art piece. So that also will continue. But I do believe that that they're going to continue to exist. Maybe we'll stop calling them NFTs because everyone just is so triggered.
Yeah, I mean, Porsche's NFT play wasn't as bad as Nat Geo's NFT play, which was not only a technical failure, but also pissed off a lot of people that were already working for Nat Geo because they may not have chosen from their pool of existing photographers and instead chose to work with outside NFT artists who were already sort of in the space but hadn't really worked with Nat Geo before. And so there is like a sort of ongoing story there. I mean, we'll see what happens, but I think a lot of people within Nat Geo who have an established relationship with them are really taking them up and saying, hey, why did you guys do this? And why did you delete the post? And, you know, they have never replied to me or any of my repeated requests for outreach. And Snow Crash ultimately was supposed to be technically handling that. And they're also gone pretty silent to me as well.
Mm. Yep. There's going to be good and bad. There's going to be obvious rugs and not so obvious until a year from now when it's clear that they did nothing with them rugs. Let's talk about Sam. It almost felt like we had a merciful couple weeks of not being focused on the FTX drama. And again, there is an actual trial date, and it's not until October. I mean, I remember when I saw that, I was like, really that far away? Are we going to have a whole year of talking about it? But the news, I feel like, when it comes to this saga, has turned from a flood into more like a steady drip. And there's a couple of things. Of course, there was the Substack. I think that was last week, but Sam started a Substack, and the memes were terrific of just, you know, his lawyers being like, please, please step away from the computer. I mean, my goodness, it must be tough to be one of his advisors, or maybe he has sent them all away, but people saying, please just stop publicly speaking. And yet he continues to do interviews, continues to invite people to his house under house arrest, and keeps blogging. But let's talk about some more financial news that came out. And that was the latest drop of the full and unredacted creditor list. And my goodness, right? I mean, Matthew, Netflix, Comcast, CVS for some reason, not to mention all the crypto companies, Coinbase, Binance, Chainalysis, Yuga Labs, we were just talking about. I mean, what company isn't owed money from FTX?
That's a good question. It seems like they all are owed money from FTX.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what this means for these companies in terms of the extent of their exposure. It's really unfortunate that FTX had so many creditors and so many huge companies on its list. And I mean, there were a lot of people promoting FTX throughout its runtime. I mean, there were a lot of influencers, a lot of YouTubers, a lot of people promoting it and doing affiliate things and running things through agencies to get promotions and striking 6-month deals. And so there was a strong effort there to, besides the obvious sports deals, there was a strong effort not only at like the corporate top level with the sports promotions, but also at the smaller level, at the influencer level, at the social media level, to really just put FTX's name out there to everyone, including like the average Joe retail person who just watches YouTube for news. So FTX like really was everywhere, even though in the grand scheme of things, it's not as big as, you know, a Binance or a Coinbase. It really did put its name out there and did those huge marketing deals. And so, I mean, retrospectively, I guess it's easy for us all to sort of look back and be like, wow, you know, not surprised. But it is kind of surprising to me to see that all these huge companies gave any money to them or were involved with them.
I do want to say that it doesn't have to be money as well. I think it could be also in kind, if I'm wrong. So if like if we're saying like, oh, CVS, did they actually give money to FTX? Maybe not. They could have supplied their first aid kits for their corporate office. I have no clue. Right. But those could
or
be
for
just
the heat arena.
Exactly. So I think that a lot of companies were somehow related to them and they are probably owed money, but maybe not because of investment. But maybe it's because of in-kind transfers or some kind of, you know, marketing times, branding, you know, some simple product. I would want to get more into it because even with these creditors that were released, we got the names, but we don't know what they're owed or why right. they're owed it. And so I think once we start opening that up, then I think we're going to start reading the book a little more clearly.
It's a wonderful time for reporters who love to comb through legal documents and financial disclosures because there is more to come. The overall moral, yet again, I think there's a political angle here, and that is just a reminder that so many entities, people, figures were caught up in this web because they were just completely charmed, whether it was by Sam himself or by the company, mostly by Sam, I think. You know, the idea of, you know, this one's different. I feel like there were politicians who feel like, oh, you know, crypto is in some way sketchy and shady and I don't trust it. But here's someone different who, you know, met with me and took me out to lunch and has convinced me that crypto could become fully regulated and be more buttoned up. And we're going to work closely with this guy. I mean, from Maxine Waters to others who championed this company or at the very least, shook hands with Sam as, you know, this is the guy who's going to be our man from crypto, who's going to bridge the gap from crypto to DC. Yikes, right?
I 100% agree. It seems like he put a lot of people in sticky situations politically, personally, and professionally because of the relationships that he did build. I think the interesting thing about this whole Sam Bankman-Fried thing is not only that he's sitting at home. Oh, by the way, you guys heard that, you know, people are trying to break into his house. They rammed down the barriers because apparently his mom and dad hired security for $10,000 a week to sit outside his house. And somebody drove a car into that barrier, got out and started yelling at the security guards trying to get the guy.
And they said, they apparently yelled like, you're not going to be able to keep us out forever. I mean, remember, you know, we sometimes laugh about all the details here, but there are people who are livid over this exchange's collapse.
As they should be. Well, anyway, the guy's sitting at home in this multi-million dollar house and in his parents' house, writing on Substack, tweeting, doing all these things. But I think the really interesting thing that's coming out, besides the fact that he's not in jail and locked up and just getting 3 squares a day and sitting on a concrete slab, besides all of that, is he's saying that FTX US is solvent. He's insisting that FTX US is solvent.
What do you make of that? And well, he hasn't been CEO for 2 months. I mean, he's been gone since November. So how can he just, it's like he's chosen that as the thing he'll keep saying. Meanwhile, even if it were the case, okay, so what? What does that have to do with anything? It doesn't change anything that happened.
Right. I mean, even the ex-president of FTX US isn't sure if FTX US is solvent. And I feel like he would have a clearer sense of FTX US's books than SBF, who clearly did not know what was going on.
Who the hell would give Brett Harrison $5 million for a new thing after this
whole
FTX US
thing? All those investors who invested, right? I mean,
Brett seemed like a good guy. We both talked to him for different programs and shows. So I'm not saying anything about Brett. I don't know how he's involved. I'm just saying, like, until this is cleared up, would you give him millions of dollars?
Interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's just, hey, VCs have money and they need to give that money to companies, right?
Like, yeah.
That's the job. It is funny.
Yeah.
The biggest thing about the FTX US solvency claims by Sam is, like, to me, what matters is they were never separate. I said that even before FTX collapsed. I also love to say that, sorry, Binance. I mean, all these companies that say, oh, well, that's, you know, our US arm and we're separate entities. How separate are they? Alameda was never separate. And when they filed for bankruptcy, it included FTX US, okay? It was all the FTX empire filed for bankruptcy. So he can say whatever he wants, but at this point, I don't know why anyone would have any motivation to believe any of it.
My take on that really quick is, like, by discrediting him so much, are we not going to look at the things he says? And sometimes they could be true. And in this case, we have the new CEO, John J. Ray III. He's done multiple cases like this in companies and restructuring before, including Enron. What if, I mean, and this is a speculation, if we're not paying attention to it, what stops them from finding money, transfer it a different way, a different place, and going, hey, I didn't find anything. And then after this is all done and said and closed up, he just goes to the Cayman Islands with $100 million of crypto that he found in FTX.us somewhere that nobody knew about. I mean, I'm just saying, like, we should take it with what Sam's saying with a grain of salt, but we shouldn't dismiss it just because Sam's saying it.
Yep, that's fair. I agree. He could certainly, just because someone lied in the past does not mean they can never tell the truth about any of the details ever again. That's exactly right. One last thing I want to mention as we wrap, because we're talking about politics, it reminds me, and I know you hit this, Matthew, on the Daily episode today, on Friday, but this Ted Cruz story was very interesting to me. It was both funny, but also encouraging. I mean, and the reason I'm always interested in this is, like, the politicians who have come out as pro-crypto have not been across the board on one party or the other. That's been true for years. And I just think that's interesting. There are Dems who are virulently anti-crypto. There are young progressive Dems who are pro-crypto. There are GOP people who love crypto and want to embrace it. And there are GOP people who are against it. And so separately from whatever you think of Ted Cruz as a politician, if you like crypto and want crypto to grow and be embraced, you should like this recent news, funny though it is, that Ted Cruz is pushing for not DC, all of DC, specifically vendors in the Capitol, in the Capitol buildings, to accept Bitcoin as payment.
I mean, you give these guys the most powerful positions in the country to do some real good for people, to talk about our national security, and the thing that Ted Cruz is advocating for, instead of healthcare or, you know, our finance or our debt ceiling or, you know, all these different things that we talk about, he wants to buy his knickknacks and his burgers at the vending machines with Bitcoin. I think it's just a shame that that's even being talked about. I don't know. Kate, what do you think of that, Kate?
Well, first of all, Ted Cruz is weird because he was Canadian and now he's American and disowned Canada. That's a whole other conversation.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But also, like, I hope he's referring to the Lightning Network, because it takes a long time for a Bitcoin-based layer transaction to settle, last time I checked.
That's very true. It's still not for everyday payments, although haters like to say, I can't use it for my morning cup of coffee, so Bitcoin has failed. And it's like, no, you don't get it. Kate's right. I had no idea about this. He renounced his Canadian citizenship in 2013. He was born in Canada.
He had to in order to be in U.S. political office. I don't think you can have dual citizenship. Fun fact.
The Bitcoin candidate. Wow. That's next time you're in D.C., Matt, maybe you'll be able to buy your, like, crusty day-old croissant from the cart in the Senate building with Bitcoin.
And they'll probably give Ted Cruz an award for it, because it's the only thing he ever got done in office.
Anyway, that was the week in review. Good fun. I hope listeners enjoy this new format, which will be every other Saturday. I know it's fun for us. So Kate, Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
And the listeners will all be back there Monday morning to hear Matthew with the usual daily. Thanks, guys.
GM.
GM, y'all.
That's our show today. Thanks for listening. GM is a Decrypt podcast co-hosted by Matthew Diemer, me, Dan Roberts, Stacey Elliott, Stephen Graves, Andrew Hayward, and Kate Irwin, and produced by Zach Edelman. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you podcast. And as always, you can get more info on our website, including video with our interview guests. Head to decrypt.co.
GM.